This podcast is brought to you by Underwriters Laboratory, Workplace Health and Safety.
So the first title we're going to release is more informational for organizations, and it's really designed to help educate the entire population related to the new view of safety. So we get into looking at how the best-in-class organizations are utilizing these techniques to drive improvement, but ultimately set up the rest of the content that will be coming online at the end of the first quarter. This first module will be available for free, and we'll announce soon when you're able to access that content as well as where. Thank you.
This cool stuff's available at Underwriters Laboratory, workplacehealthandsafety.com. Think about it, you guys. They're great sponsors, and thank you for doing that. And now, let's get on with the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your loving host, Todd Conklin. I hope you're in the mood for a good podcast, because I'm not going to give you a crappy one. Let me adjust the microphone and get everything just right here so everything's very comfortable and cool. Okay, I got my little studio, the podcasting control center of North America. Actually, this is, believe it or not, this is the worldwide podcasting control center. It's not just North America. It's worldwide. I mean, right now this podcast is beaming its way to Europe. It's beaming its way to Asia. It's beaming its way to Australia, New Zealand, to Iceland. Oh, man, it's amazing. Where this space, probably. I bet it's going into space. I don't think anyone's listening to it in space, but maybe they are. I don't know. NASA people listen. I get a little feedback from the NASA cats on this, so maybe. Oh, holy, I never even thought of it. Now I'm freaking myself out. Now I'm nervous. Well, I hope you're in the mood for a good podcast, because today's an interesting one. I've interviewed a couple young men, and I say young men both tongue-in-cheek and out of a certain amount of satisfaction. These are a couple guys that are younger than I and kind of in the millennial generation, and they're really interesting, and I think you're really going to like it. Their names are Zach Woods and Mike Rayo, and I heard them at the NERC convention, the NERC meeting. The NERC is the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. If you can't tell, I just read that off a sheet of paper. There it is. And they had a conference, and it was great. I was the keynote speaker, so I got to go. I mean, no free lunch. I had to actually blab out a presentation, kind of kick the whole baby off. But in the midst of it, I was watching the other guys, which is a super fun way to go to a conference. And I saw these two guys give a presentation, and they built a really interesting case around the difference between building controls or barriers or safeguards or defenses and building capacity, which is something that I struggle with as well. In fact, I struggle with it so much that I have a slide that I use all the time where I talk about safety. Safety is not the absence of accidents. It's the presence of defenses. And then I push the button on the slide advancer, and the word defenses changes to the word capacity. Because I also think there's a huge difference between the notion of defenses, which is kind of a nod to sort of a linear, if you just predicted everything and defended it, it would be fixed, to the notion that what we really have is the capacity to expand our systems to meet the need of whatever high-risk, high-hazard work we're doing, which is kind of a really interesting way to think about it. And here are these two young guys talking about it, just up there giving a big old presentation on it. And I thought, that's it. I'll get them on the podcast. So I asked them, and they said yes. They were kind enough to say, sure, we'll do it. And so we slipped outside, and you can definitely tell we're outside. You'll hear a truck go by. There's quite a bit of background noise, and a plane flies over, but, you know, that's how it is. It was a beautiful day in Atlanta at the very end of March 2016, deep in the midst of pollen season. And if you live in Atlanta, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's kind of a dusting of green over the entire city of Atlanta. People, cars, buildings, sidewalks, streets, roads, anything. It's just this layer of pollen everywhere. But it was beautiful. And it was super fun to sit outside and talk to these guys. And it's super encouraging to me to hear these guys talk about New View safety in such a smart way. I mean, and I'll let them introduce themselves because they'll do that pretty well. Other than that, we probably should check in a little bit. How are you doing? How's your year going? Good? Are you getting better? Are you getting worse? Are you staying the same? And how's your goal work going for this year? you know, I am sucking this year. You know, my goal was to slow down and take it easy. The Kingsford model, slow down, grill more. That was what I was going to do. And that's not a very good, that's not a good goal, because you're riddled with guilt when you can't do it and you want to do it. It's clearly what I want to do, but I keep getting, you know, wrapped up in doing a bunch of other junk. And so I'm busy as can be, but I'm not complaining. And gosh, this podcast, you guys, thank you so much. I can't even tell you how fun it is to be a part of this and how much fun it is to have so many of you listening to it. The numbers are nutty. And so we have lots of people that listen, and we're building kind of a community. I think what it really nods to is the fact that this new view of safety is getting bigger and the groups are getting larger and the opinions are getting more varied and the academic research is getting stronger and the practitioner knowledge and experience is getting deeper and great things are happening. So, I mean, all in all, I would say this is a pretty good place to be. And we're certainly learning a bunch and we're certainly doing a bunch and the world is becoming a better place. And that is all it's about. Now, if we could just slow down and smell the damn roses for at least a minute, that would make it a perfect world, a perfect world. But maybe I'll get on that next time. I've already kind of started to think about what next year's goal is, because that's how disappointed I was with this year's goal. Last year's goal, gratitude, man, that was really, that was super valuable to me. I learned last year that gratitude is an action. It's a verb. And you have to actually make gratitude happen. It was a great year for me. I mean, I totally learned, you know, if I'm going to be thankful for stuff, I got to actually be thankful for stuff. But this year, slowing down, I don't know. It's not working. But enough of this. Let's get into this podcast. Without much further ado, listen to this carefully. I think you'll find this very interesting. Lots of stuff going on in this podcast. This is Zach Woods and Mike Rayo on the Pre-Accident Podcast just for you.
So I'm Mike Rayo. I'm at Ohio State, and I am. I've historically been a consultant. I own a small consultancy doing cognitive systems engineering, resilience engineering, human factors engineering, and I am slowly towing the line into academia. And in the fall, I'm actually going to start as an assistant professor at Ohio State. So yeah, big changes, but still, you know, fighting the good fight.
And I'm Zach Woods. I'm a program manager at Calpine. We're a power generating company, and I got my master's in ISC from also Ohio State University as well, and similar background or program as Mike.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and Zach and I worked together in the College of Engineering. We actually did some projects in the College of Medicine for the medical center as well. So yeah, it's been an interesting interweaving of paths.
Yet I ended up in power gen. Go figure.
That's right.
How'd that happen, though? How'd you end up in
power gen? The true story behind that was I had a hard date after I got my master's that I wanted to have a job by. Self-inflicted. and decided I wanted to live in a foreign country. So I said, all right, I'll go move to Texas. So...
Yeah, you don't have to edit that out, right?
No, you don't have to edit that out. The Texans love that.
That is true.
It's aspirational.
What, Mike, sort of brought you to this side of the house?
I got duped into starting my master's degree at Ohio State. So Phil Smith and Dave Woods are both there. They knew that I had been doing some software design and development work and started into usability. And Phil convinced me that, yeah, that's exactly what we do. That's, you know, we do usability testing. And I took my first class, and it was this new view of performance. We called it new view of error at the time, but now I'm really thinking about it. It's really that new view of system performance.
Right.
And I got hooked. I mean, it crystallized everything that I had seen, because I'd worked in healthcare previously to that as well, and it crystallized everything that I'd seen as tempo got higher, as uncertainties got greater. You know, the normal stuff wasn't working anymore. We just couldn't make sense of those things, or we just would try to explain them away.
And the simple explanations always seemed to you like wanting more, where someone would, right, some event would occur and someone would offer you a sentence explanation that would ultimately kind of boil down to, well, so-and-so, you know, made a mistake, or so-and-so is dumb, or could you believe what had happened? And those were always just unsatisfying answers, right? To hear, you know, someone say, well, this error happened because of why, and typically why was something, you know, blame-oriented or fault-oriented or something like that. And it just never was really satisfying, especially when you were there and you saw it. Because if you were there and you saw it, you saw all the stresses, you saw the confusion, you saw how somebody was trying to make sense of something and how they were struggling and that the optimal decision wasn't really apparent to them and that they were balancing lots of things.
So move us in your discussion about why this new view is moving really pretty lightning speed towards resilience. And it is. I mean, I think that's a. I don't think that's necessarily a terribly controversial statement.
I think every industry is moving at its different speed. You know, some are more lightning quick than others. But I think we're more people in the industry are having some more of those aha moments. So we just got done talking about the difference between improving defenses and improving capacity, and improving, and I think we fell into the pitfall over the last, 20 years of trying to pit one against another, right? So the everybody who's shoring up defenses, they were idiots, and everybody who was trying to shore up capacity had their head in the clouds. And I think what we've all come to understand is that shoring up your defenses is critical. And showing up capacity, and by capacity I mean that ability to act outside of what you thought you needed to design for, that's also critical. So this adaptive capacity that we've been talking about a lot, sometimes shoring up the defenses is going to work, but we've seen recurring issues in nuclear, we've seen recurring issues in healthcare, where they shored up defenses, and when that didn't work, they shored up defenses more, and when that didn't work, they shored up defenses more, and where they wrote 34 more pages of procedures, and we're still seeing this hazard is persistent.
I think part of it is just the general acceptance of complexity science.
Right.
I think people are having a better idea, an understanding of what complexity means, and you can even, from a popular perspective, you could probably even say, oh, it was Jurassic Park and Ian Malcolm and classic Jeff Goldblum, right? Basically introducing these concepts into the popular vernacular.
Classic Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, no, right? He's got a very purr attitude to himself. But I mean, if you think about it, oftentimes concepts require it to be entered into the popular discourse.
Yeah.
So, if you just talked about what's the new hot thing in this past year was this play called Hamilton, this Broadway musical called Hamilton, and suddenly there's this giant rediscovery of a founding father, and how oftentimes it takes a popular culture event to kind of build that, and sometimes it comes in different ways. So I would argue that there's more general acceptance of complexity science, and then in addition to that, stuff keeps happening, and those traditional mechanisms that people thought could solve it, they don't seem to be working, or they have diminishing returns. So there's this desire, people are looking for something to quench their thirst, and once you start actually seeing these principles get applied, it really makes sense. It really does actually affect outcomes in a very positive way. But it is difficult. And I think that's the thing that sometimes people forget, that this is challenging to a certain extent to implement in practice. It isn't as simple as, hey, we're going to do Six Sigma, and do lean. Those principles and measures and stuff make a lot more sense, I think, from a management perspective than some of the complexity science stuff.
And I think they're easier to implement and get your arms around. I think that's if you know DMAIC, then you've got a tool set to go do that work. I don't think we're quite as buttoned up yet. We don't have our DMAIC. We have lots of people creating lots of algorithms, but you still don't have the heft of paperwork and process to say, just do that. The other trend, just to maybe go a little different way, I'm seeing more folks that at one point were practitioners, they were operators, and they've seen it themselves, and now they are the new wave of calm safety scientists or folks that are really, really thinking about safety a lot. And everybody I've talked to who was an operator, so a good example is I talk about deviation from norm and just variation. Variation is value agnostic. Deviation definitely has some baggage along with it, right? And when I talk to them about deviation versus variation, they immediately know what I'm talking about. They're like, no. There's all kinds of things we have to do that deviate from that vary with the vary our performance from this thing, and that's how we keep it working. That's true of nuclear power plant operators, aviation folks. I even started talking to college football players. That's where I live. I live in one of the college football meccas, and it resonated immediately with these guys that sometimes we just have to go make a play, But there's this enormous system that we also have to understand and make decisions about whether I'm going to veer or I'm not going to stay the course. And those guys now, you know, I think we have maybe, you know, hopefully we're getting critical mass. But those folks, you know, I have a student who may be going into this, you know, if he doesn't go in the NFL.
Well, I think, yeah. What I would just say with that is, right, an operator or a sharp end perspective, right? They understand all the nuances and critical things, and right, that expertise is what gives individuals the ability to anticipate, which we talk about with resilience. I think when those individuals start going into academia or start moving up in the ladder, right, they have a really core understanding, and they know that some of these other methods don't really capture the nuance, the context of what's going on.
Are we demystifying some of these ideas? Let me ask this. Are we demystifying complexity?
I think you could make an argument that we are. Yeah. That's very feng shui of you there, right? I think you can make an argument that we are. But at the same time, I think your use of the car and the rumble strip is probably the most powerful real-world example that someone can anchor on.
Right.
I mean, I've stolen it a dozen times.
Yeah, you should.
Because it's completely intuitive and it makes so much sense. And given that the most complex system that an average human being is going to deal with is driving,
yeah.
Right? And that's the perfect way. And you say, hey, look, right, driving, you know, is pretty easy, right? You know, we teach 16-year-olds how to do it, and they can do it somewhat effectively. Even I at 16 can do it somewhat effectively. But that's a complex system. So if you're, in aviation or in healthcare or in nuclear or in some type of power or the military or football or whatever, right, you could make an argument that these are more complex systems than driving. So why wouldn't these same principles that we can make powerful anchors to demystify complexity and something that everyone intuitively understands, like driving? I think it's great.
So I never thought about demystifying. I think we are demystifying, but I think we're doing two other important things. And one is we've named it as a culprit.
I agree.
It is the enemy of safety in our way of thinking. So I hate to use cause and effect, but let's say it's a contributor, a big contributor to some of the events that we'd rather not see. But I also think we've done a better job of talking about how does complexity come about. You know, we as a society, I think we continually increase our expectations of what living is like. You know, we want it better, we want it faster, we want it, you know, nobody in their right mind would jump up in an airplane versus taking a car in the 21st century, except the stats say it's safer than driving and what have you, but you're still defying the laws of physics temporarily, or at least risk in physics. So why do we do that? Well, we want to get there faster. Or why do we even entertain the notion of an autonomous car? That should scare the bejesus out of all of us. But we entertain that because, yeah, maybe I want to do something else. I want more time to myself. For whatever reason, I want it to come pick me up. I want an easier life or a safer life, or maybe not safer. So I think that we continuously set the bar higher and higher. We want to go faster and faster. We want to do more and more. And it results in these complex systems. You know, we're at a power generation and transmission conference right now, and we have more expectations of that power.
So I would actually bring up something else, which is, right, if you kind of go back and you read, right, not to go into, but right, in the 30s, there was this idea that we would reach, that we would have all this extra free time, right? As the economy and industrialization improved and efficiency improved, what would people do with their free time? And, you know, here we are 80 years later, and people are just as busy as ever. But some of the technological gains from the previous century, flight or interstates, sometimes it takes longer to get places now than it did, 30 years ago. And I think that is something that we as a society are actually struggling with and our systems are struggling with. So I live in Houston, and Houston spent a huge amount of money expanding I-10. And I-10 is huge now. But the actual travel time on it is longer now than it was a decade ago, pre-expansion. So, right, would you... Now, if you ask somebody who drives that every day, they will say, oh, it's so much better than it used to be. Yet the actual travel times would disagree with that. And I think that's, something that we're wrestling with. Have we reached the barrier of our physical systems to achieve efficiency?
Is a worker a free agent? Do they exercise free agency?
Now, that is a loaded question, right?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, why would I not ask a loaded question?
Yeah. So, right. The management response would be no, unless they do something wrong, and then yes, they are, and then I get to, right, and then they deserve the discipline that they are receiving. I would say yes, they are a free agent because they're learning on the job. And as they learn, they're going to find their own efficiencies and their own value adds. So I want to give a quick example from Calpine. Basically, the group that I'm in, we do the major maintenance on the gas and steam turbines. And just for how that works, most of the work actually ends up being on the gas turbines. So the steam turbines are just about 20% of the spend. So most of our systems are based around the gas turbines. So for forecasting purposes, the steam turbines, we would just average them all out. Miners, we just take the average of them. That's your average miner. Same thing with majors. But if you go into the details and you ask a steam turbine engineer or steam turbine director, he would say, this is a bad model. Because what's actually driving your costs are how many valves are on a steam turbine. And we have lots of different steam turbines. So he knows that the system that we're using to predict our costs is fundamentally flawed. So the easy question is, well, why don't you just do it by valves, right? Well, when we were organized in a manner that was basically mini departments, you would focus on what was your most work, right, which was gas turbines. So steam turbines were ignored and would cause wild swings that we would have to explain. But then we reorganized and tried to go a more team model around technology groups. So now there's a financial analyst who's dedicated to steam in addition to generators and our aeroderivatives. And she, from her own volition, basically came on this own conclusion on her own, which was, oh, wait a second. These are all over the place from the average. Why is that? Oh, it's because of the valves. Well, why don't I just build a model for average cost based upon how many valves? And now we've gotten this efficiency gain, right? And it was all from just how we organize things to find solutions. So I would argue that that was a worker who used their free agency to create efficiency because they wanted to do their job well.
Within the system.
Within the system.
Interesting.
So that's right. That was an example I really wanted to talk about here because it's just about fundamental organization. And I think that's what I would challenge management to think about, right? So we're in Atlanta right now, right? Atlanta is somewhat of a football town. Who is a better coach? Is a better coach someone who just has a system and just wants to implement their system? So they'll come in, fire coaches, get rid of players, get rid of scouts, only get players that match the quote-unquote system. Or is a better coach someone who comes in and goes, hey, what resources do I have? What are my players good at? What are my coaches good at? Where do we have success? How do we sustain and build upon that? How do I have a rapid evolution to see, you know, how I can compete better against these other ones? And how do I figure out where are goals of improvement? And, you know, I'm not a New England Patriots fan, but I think that's been the real success of Bill Belichick is that he's been able to basically be rapidly evolving, rapidly adapting, constantly changing his roster and his team to fit what they're good at. And of course he also has Tom Brady, who happens to be maybe the best quarterback ever, which we can't dismiss, but right, if you had to weigh a systems guy like Chip Kelly, who did innovative things at college, and we can talk about that, versus right, this coach who looked at what resources I have and how do I change constantly, I would, you know, to match my resources and my constraints, I would think Bill Belichick is the model that you'd really want to focus on.
So I'm going to give a much less nuanced answer, and that is categorically yes, they have free agency, and I think the way we know that they have, I've never heard it called free agency, except it gets us back to sports, but they certainly have agency. They have the ability to improvise. In fact, they're required to improvise, and I think the biggest evidence of that is that a workforce can actually, a form of protest is actually just work to roll. So I'm going to do exactly what you told me, nothing more, nothing less, and everything goes in.
And I just want to interrupt. I have experienced directly a political conflict within an organization when individuals work to roll, and it is fascinating to watch because it really does gum up and make problems occur, but they're doing, quote-unquote, their job.
So we were amongst some of the folks I was talking about, we were talking about variation, variability. And, you know, some folks that were saying, well, it's inevitable. I'm like, no, it's not inevitable. It's necessary. It is inevitable, and it's necessary. And so, and it, you know, it's pretty dramatic to this work-to-roll thing, but there's also, the one guy gets fired when he shows, you know, too much variability, and then you see everybody clam up.
Right.
You can't learn, and two, now where, you know, you're seeing a more minor version of that working to role, and that's, I think, incredibly dangerous, because now you don't see people actively working across boundaries, working across roles.
Or seeking new information.
That's right. There's retreating, because if I go seek this more information or go do anything on my role, I might get pounded. So that diminished agency is dangerous.
I think if you asked a manager about right, and that's why I prefaced this, which if you said, right, do our employees have, you know, free agency, or are they free agents? I started with this punishment model for a manager. But if you asked a manager when they were hiring someone, what would they want? I think the biggest thing that they would talk about would be initiative, that they care about their job, and that they were willing to work hard. And what those things all lead to is free agency, the ability to go out, seek information, learn, make connections, and, you know, to basically be good at their job, because people fundamentally want to be good at their job.
Well, what'd you think? Huh? It's pretty thoughtful, I thought. It's really interesting to hear these guys talk about it. The whole notion between deviance and variability or variation is definitely something to think about as well. It's really a good podcast. I enjoyed it immensely. Very entertaining, very interesting, and much by which we can learn. So that is today's podcast. Hey, if you've got ideas or people that want to be on it, or if you've got some things that we're not covering, if you're mad or angry or happy or glad, you can always talk to me about it, and we can get some stuff on here and make the world a better place. That's what we're all about. Until then, though, this is today's podcast, the Pre-Accident Podcast of the new view of safety and reliability and resilience. We're all sort of marching in that direction. I hope you enjoyed it. It's lots of fun. Until then, as always, learn something new every single day. Bet you did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.